So one thing that you said early in what you described was something like, you know, the experience of trust or love isn't something, you use the language something like, it's not something you observe or not something you're looking at, you just know it, right? You just know it. And that's a very helpful understanding that there's certain kinds of experiences. I mean, like that. So there's different ways our mind attends to things and knows things. So it knows like body sensation, like my foot on the floor. That's like very precise. You know, I can feel that sensation, and it's like it's got it, it. The sensation has maybe some containment almost. It's like it's there. The mind can kind of focus on it. It knows that experience very. You know, it can look at it and say, yes, that's that thing. Like it can look in the night sky. I used the sky example the other day. It can look at the moon. It's like, yeah, there's the moon. We can name the moon. We can point to the moon. And it's like, that's the moon. And so that is one way that our minds can know things, is by kind of picking up individual experiences. And even emotions sometimes can have that quality. Like, you know, for me, certain kinds of very strong emotions can be very clear. It's like, yep, that's anger, or that's frustration, or that's impatience. But other kinds of emotions feel a little more wispy, you know, like love and trust. More like the Milky Way, where, you know, you can't say, you know, that patch there, that is the Milky Way. It's a much broader experience. So our minds, the eye can take in that wash of the Milky Way. The eye can also take in the velvety blackness of the sky, the entirety of the velvety blackness of the sky, which is an even broader experience, which is kind of the ground in which we see the Milky Way. And so that mind, you know, the awareness has the capacity to take in these more wispy kind of experiences, as well as the precise. And so often I'd say in our learning, in our cultures, in our usual lives, we've learned really well how to pay attention to those specific things. You know, that's what's happening here. That's what's happening here. For you to be recorded? Yeah, okay.
Like love and affinity, the feeling doesn't seem to have like the object.
That's right. It doesn't feel that way. I mean, but yet that love can be. It is an experience, right? It's an experience, and we can call it, could be called an object, but it doesn't have that feeling of object.
Is it a different level?
I don't know what the right language for that is. I mean, language kind of falls apart here. But I just like to point to, like, another example of this in another realm. This one often kind of touches people. I might have used this the other day, is in the realm of the skin. You know, some days if it's raining, you know, you're walking outside and you feel drops. You know, it's like individual specific sensations. You know, those sensations, those are easy to know. And like today, it's really humid. You know, I walked out the door this morning, it's like, whew, I knew the humidity. But it's not like I know it because of one little tiny patch on the skin. It's much more of the broader feeling. You know, there's a lot that goes into knowing humidity. There's the way the air comes into the lungs. There's the feeling on the sensation on the skin. There's the smell of the moisture in the air. There's just so much that goes into that feeling of humidity. And so it's kind of like that, you know, that it's a much broader kind of taking something in. So it's maybe we could call these diffuse objects or diffuse experiences. And I'd say you're pointing to those kinds of experiences. There's a similarity in the knowing of awareness to the more broad kinds of experiences at times. It's like the knowing of awareness is not something you turn around and look at like this. We step back and we know it more through how awareness knows experience. And so sometimes, you know, the knowing of things like trust or love, so the love and the trust are there, and then there's the awareness of that. So, you know, sometimes those kinds of experiences might help us to recognize this more vague, non-specific, like, you know, it's not like I can turn around and say, oh yes, that's awareness. So that kind of stepping back and that experience you pointed to, that's an avenue into having more of a sense of the kind of way it feels when we know the awareness.
Yes, I think I'm on a path.
There's a distinction between them.
So the distinction between awareness and knowing, and in terms of talking about the five aggregates the other day. So this could be a whole series of Dharma talks. I think I'll try to do a little. It might end up being like a little 5 or 10 minute little thing. So they are not the same thing. There's a relationship between them. But what I'll say, let's see, let's start by just maybe teasing apart your recognition or awareness of knowing without mindfulness. Okay, so I talked about this the other day with respect to attention. You know, that when you're driving down the street or walking down the street, there's an attention happening, even if you're not mindful, even if you're lost in thought. So that attention happens. Also, there's a knowing that's happening there. You know, so there's seeing that's happening, and then there's the receiving of sight. There's the knowing of seeing. It's like those processes of feeling, perception, and knowing happen whether we are mindful or not. So an example, you know, at one point, and this kind of popped in early in my practice. I had an experience. I was on retreat, and I was kind of... you know, kind of in my own world, lost in thought, and I was in the dining hall, and I saw somebody come into the dining hall and kind of, you know, wander around, and I kind of got lost in the thoughts of what are they doing, and not a lot of mindfulness. And then they left, and then somebody else came in and did something, and then they left. And at some point in this process, after like maybe 5 minutes, awareness returned. Mindfulness returned. And so I'm using awareness and mindfulness synonymously here. So mindfulness returned. And in that moment, there's a clear difference or distinction. It's like, oh, this is mindfulness now. I'm really clearly aware in this moment of what's happening in this moment. But in that moment also, there was a kind of a remembering of what had happened. And it's like, wow. I wasn't aware then, mindful then, but I remember what was going on there. Knowing is going on there. Perceiving is going on there. Feeling is going on there. Those processes go on. They take care of us in a way when our mind is lost in thought or occupied with other things. And so that is what the knowing means. As Sayadaw sometimes says, the knowing is a little bit stupid. It's just like, you know, you've got a sight and then there's the seeing. There's a knowing of it. There's a sound and the knowing of it. There's the touch and the knowing of it. It's really simple, just bare at the sense base, just knowing. Very simple kind of quality. It doesn't have a lot of, like, intelligence. It's just contact, aware of, like, you know, something hitting a sense door, kind of. So knowing is a really simple quality of mind, only it's really powerful. And also I'd say, you know, the analogy that the Buddha offers for knowing is interesting. It doesn't sound like it's stupid, actually. You know, so this is a different take, perhaps. You know, for me, the knowing is a little bit stupid helps me to just kind of, you know, just keep it simple in the recognizing of it. But the Buddha's analogy for the knowing, the process of knowing, is that it's like a magician. And at a crossroads, you know, just a magician, you come upon this magician and they're kind of, you know, doing these things. And it's kind of like, ooh, ah, wow, look at what they can do. And I've been reflecting on that analogy, you know, how does that, you know, how does that like inform what I understand knowing is? And the way that I have kind of brought it in or take that in is like, in the knowing, for instance, like when we're not so conscious of knowing, there's almost a weaving together of experience, a conjuring of experience, we could say, use that word from the magic show, a conjuring of experience that makes it seem like stable or solid or one thing. So, you know, we've got six senses, and yet very often we don't really, it's like, for instance, looking at that wall, there's seeing of that wall, you know, so there's the seeing of it, there's the knowing of the seeing, but, you know, as I know that, there's also a feeling, you know, it's just like when we look around this room, there's also the hearing, that the hearing is bouncing off the walls. There's something I know about the wall based on the hearing, at a very subconscious level. There's also something I know about the wall based on having contacted walls. It's hard. You know, it's like if I were to walk really fast, my body would stop me before I got to the wall because it understands that that seeing is related to hardness. So the feeling and the seeing are related. And so the mind weaves together the experience of wall, all these different senses, it weaves it together in the experience and the recognition of wall. It's like the conjuring of this. And this gets connected to the concept of wall that, you know, but the it's like the I think the knowing maybe has a way of weaving together the senses so that it feels like one experience rather than six experiences. And so that's just my understanding. That's my reflection on that analogy that the Buddha offers about knowing, that it's a kind of a weaving of the experience in a way. So that all happens whether we're mindful or not. And we've been exploring what that mindfulness is, that arising of like, I know that I know. And so this may be a way that mindfulness and knowing are connected, because, you know, we can't have mindfulness without the knowing. We can't have mindfulness without the perceiving. We can't have mindfulness without the feeling. You know, it's like those three pieces of the aggregates, they are what we become aware of. Well, actually, all five aggregates is what we become aware of. The mindfulness kind of like wakes up to informing us that, I mean, these five aggregates are working. And so, you know, the body sensation, the feeling, the perception, any emotions that are coming up, it's like we can be aware of that or not. And yet mindfulness itself is a mental formation. It is found in one of the five aggregates. And I think it was really the brilliance of the Buddha to point to, ooh, that mental formation, wow, that one's really, really useful. Let's explore that one a little bit. And it's like what that aggregate does is allows us to know all of the aggregates at work. But that one does not have to be arising. It is a conditioned arising. Mindfulness arises in dependence on conditions. We are cultivating those conditions. It tends to arise more when we recognize it, and so that's a condition for supporting it. And then, you know, so maybe one piece, and I don't know how true this is, but, you know, it may be connected. As we become aware that we're aware, we may also be kind of stepping back into becoming aware that we know, becoming aware of the knowing. So as we're aware of awareness, there's more of the broader, we are becoming aware of the mental formation of mindfulness and the feeling of that, but in there also is becoming aware of the knowing, which is the other aggregate. Now that's where it gets a little hard to talk about, but that's probably enough for now.
I wouldn't claim to understand it.